Jason won that match against Shane, and Shane's a king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast, and I am joined, like usual, with my best friend ever, Rob.
Hi, Nate. What's going on today? Oh, it's another week?
It is.
A whole week went by? Seems like I just talked to you an hour ago.
Rob once told me that he doesn't like to have friends, so it's actually a big deal that we are best friends ever.
Well, and here's why, Nate. There's a reason for that, Nate, is because if you have friends, they call you. And then there you are. Now you have to answer or ignore them. So it's better if you don't have any, then you never get the calls.
That's
so then you
don't.
You're not faced with that dilemma, that moral dilemma. Should I answer or not? They're going to ask me, "Hey, did you get my call?" Well, then you got to lie. So you're really forced to answer it, or you're a liar.
That's true.
Well,
I'm glad that you never ghost my calls then.
No. In fact, after the first three or four when you called me that I just ignored, then you cornered me and I couldn't weasel out of it that I did get them. Yes, I just ignored them and I'm sorry. And there I was stuck. So here we are stuck another week. Here we go.
Maybe the listeners are happy. Maybe they're not. Who knows? Why don't we get started though?
We just can't control, Nate, what other people do.
That's true.
I wish I could.
That's true.
Because my life would be a lot easier if I could control everybody around me.
That is definitely true. Are you ready to start?
Let's go.
All right, let's do this. As usual, we have a bunch of stuff to get cleared up in the beginning. The first thing, I actually built a shop on my website, or our website, cueitupodcast.com. And on there, all of the t-shirts that we have are now available, and you can buy them on the website. And I will ship them out from there. So there's no longer any sort of like reaching out to the podcast with a size or anything like that. It'll all be centralized onto the website. So
if I was a listener out there, I'd buy a dozen of them and then just give them away to my friends.
That would be the best Christmas gift you could ever ask for. I'm kind of hoping you buy me one for Christmas.
Okay, let's go to something else.
I guess that's a no. So yeah, if you want a t-shirt, head over to the website and order yourself one because they are awesome. And yeah, on the topic of t-shirts, the promotion for the 1,000 likes on Facebook has completed. And all of the winners, you know who you are because I've reached out to you. And I have not shipped the winners out yet. I have been waiting for all of the shirts to be fulfilled. And I actually made up a bunch of new t-shirts today. With a bunch of new colors and a couple of the more popular ones back in stock. So if you were waiting for a t-shirt as well and you just didn't like the colors, there are a bunch more available online, like I said. The t-shirts will be shipped out probably tomorrow or Tuesday. So
what's the favorite color?
Purple has been by far the favorite color thus far.
Really?
Yes, the purple.
I would have never guessed that.
The purple has been the most popular. As far as desire to have them, of course, there are other ones that have sold more because there's been more opportunity. Like obviously the black has sold more because I made up a lot more of those. So, but the purple has been the most sought after.
Huh? What do you think that's because?
Because it's an awesome color. Duh.
No, no. I mean a reason, a real reason.
I honestly don't know. I think they are pretty cool colors though. I really like the. I have a purple one myself and I wear it a lot. I really like it. But as far as a real reason, I don't know. So I guess we can move on. We are going to do a new segment of the podcast, which this was actually Rob's idea, and we are going to call it the Two Tips segment. And the two tips are going to be just basically two tips, not of English, but suggestions that Rob and I have that can help you basically become a better player. Things that we've done throughout our careers that have helped us get to kind of the next level. And Rob suggested this last week after the phone call we had, and I thought it was a great idea. And a lot of people have been asking for little tips and suggestions here and there. So this could be a good way to get out some information to those who want it. So
and everybody needs to be reminded that we are not, I don't believe you are, I know I am not, a certified billiard pool instructor. Okay, these are, I've got 60 years of pocket pool knowledge, and you're a great player. So we're not certified. No organization has said we have the authority to do this. We're simply announcing that we're going to do it.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good disclaimer to put in there. We are not professionals. Yeah. We are not trying to be professionals. We are just giving what has worked for us in the past. And so then that kind of leads naturally into, I have created a discussion group on Facebook for the Cue It Up podcast. And in that discussion group, it is called Cue It Up Discussion Page. And if you wanted to reach out to the podcast, if you cannot find it, I did post it to our page. So if you go to the Cue It Up podcast Facebook page and scroll down a little ways, you can find the group that I posted. You could also go to the communities tab and it will be there. If you are interested, you can join the group and you can post in the group things that you would like to hear on the podcast, guests you'd like to have in the future on the podcast, anything you would like Rob and I to talk about. It's just an easier way to get information from you, the listener, to us, the idiot talking heads. So head over to the page and join that group if you would like. And then lastly, we can get our two shout-outs of the week. Rob, would you like to go first?
Shout-out, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I thought about this long and hard, and my shout-out this week is going to go to Tyler Steyer, the just recently turned professional young player from Wisconsin. He's showing the world right now, and telling everybody why he should have been picked for that Moscone Cup in the first place. And this last showing in the CSI, the nine ball and the eight ball was outstanding in both events. And the last event, just to give you a rundown, these are the players he beat: Darren Appleton, no chump there; Yusan Chang, no chump there; Johnny Mora; Thorsten Holman. And then again, Johnny Mora took John down twice. And then he goes hill-hill with the player that Junglin Chang, the fellow who comes in second to Skyler Woodward. So, and he was breaking on the hill and basically got a little bit of a bad roll when he tried to break a ball out and scratched. So, you know, that kind of stuff happens to us all. But, yeah, Tyler deserves a shout-out. Especially for kind of the aggravation he put up with people who didn't know him. He wasn't a big force in pool at the time, and they were unsure. There was some questioning of that. Well, there should be no question now. With that list of players that he beat, and some of them fairly handily, and then losing to the second place player, really the difference between first, second, and third place was one game of pool, one game of eight ball. You know, having a chance to be second place instead of third, or maybe win the thing. So there's my shout out today. Tyler, way to go.
I think that's a great shout out to have. I echo everything you said. He has definitely earned our respect at this point. And if you are still hesitant to give it, what are you doing? We need to get all of your negativity out of pool, because Tyler is doing great things and other players do a lot of great things, and we don't need the negativity surrounding them. So, Rob, I think that was a great shout out, and I will give my shout out this week to a certain Swede, Patrick Lovstrad. So hopefully I pronounced that right, but if not, sorry. And Patrick reached out to the podcast this week and basically said, in so many words, it was a big long paragraph, but he basically said in so many words that he's been listening to the podcast every week, and he decided that he would look into Jacoby Custom Cues. And he went on their website and liked what he saw, just to try. He had never really heard of Jacoby much. And since they were sponsoring the podcast, he decided that he would reach out to them and see what they were all about. So after looking around for a while on the website and through other means, he ended up actually deciding to buy one. And the last few sentences of it, of the message that he said, let's see here. I found a fantastic Jacoby Custom Cue with a black carbon shaft from a Jacoby dealer in Wisconsin named Crooked Cues. The point of this is to sponsor something good is not charity. It will give you something back, real business. Jacoby, by sponsoring the podcast, you got to sell me far away from Sweden, a $2,000 plus Q. All winners. Keep up the good work. And regards, Patrick. So I think that that was a pretty, I think that was a pretty cool message that he had and a pretty cool thing that he did. So, Patrick, you get my shout out for the week, and thanks for listening all the way from Sweden.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick. Scandinavian folks are quite good at a lot of things. A pool just being one of them.
Especially the Winter Olympics. They'd like dominate. Norway.
That too, but they're good golfers. You know, there's great golfers from Sweden.
Yeah, there
tennis
are.
Players, some tremendous tennis players from Sweden. You know, and Finland also.
Finland, Norway, and Sweden, they like clean up every year in the yeah. Winter Olympics, and or every 4 years in the Winter Olympics.
Well, they have a lot of indoor sports.
Yeah. So, Rob, did you think when we started this podcast that we would be having somebody from Sweden reaching out to the podcast or even listening to the podcast?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, I absolutely thought that your idea of this podcast was going to be a good thing and was going to reach a lot of people. And because you were emphatic about it, you just were determined. And, I mean, look at the room you're in. It's like a wood holding box. It's a little cubby hole with wires going everywhere. You know, I mean, what the heck?
Well,
you know, Dave Jacoby started his pool cube business from his garage. And you're starting an international podcast from your storeroom, you know, your closet, basically.
Yeah,
so, yeah, there's a lot of similarities, actually, Nate, between you and Dave Jacoby. So that's great. Yeah, I'm good for Jacoby's. It's such a family thing, and they continue to employ more people. I don't know how many employees. I'm going to guess at 17, 18 now. I could be wrong at that. Could be more.
I think they might have more than that.
Yeah, they might have more now. I know every year they're adding people to their employ there in Nacoosa, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Well, good for them.
I think that also just... You know, taking a little step back, that might be the nicest thing you've ever said, Rob. When did you get so nice?
I think I'm influenced by my friend and his wife who are visiting from Florida. They invaded my home, and they're nice people, and it's rubbing off on me. I can't help it.
Wow. I hope they're staying for a couple of weeks.
Right? Well, they're actually staying for a few days, yeah.
I hope they're staying for a couple of months.
A week. My wife is laughing these days, actually.
Wow.
Yeah,
She hasn't laughed for 20 years.
Oh, I know, 29. No, yeah. We got along just great, though. We met.
I think that's being reused from one of your tidbits.
I think it is, yes. Yeah, well, some people maybe didn't hear it the first time around.
It was funny the first time, and it was funny this time.
Yeah. Well, you got to slide them in there, you know, Nate.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Well, I guess that's pretty much all we got to get cleared up in the beginning. You ready to jump right in?
Yeah, shout-outs are over with. Let's go.
All right. Don't forget to register for this year's Hall of Fame weekend, October 11th through the 13th in Beloit, Wisconsin. We hope that you will join us for the inductions of Jeffrey Carter, David Jacoby, Randy Lamar, and Frank Stelman. Register for this banquet at La Casa Grande, and the $2,000 added tournament at the Carom Room can be found on wibhof.org. Don't forget to renew your membership if you plan to attend. The Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame would like to thank you all for your support. So there were a few events in Wisconsin this past week, and we can jump right in with a Scotch doubles that was held at Tom and Joe's, and that had Rick and Jason. I don't know any last names because they don't say it on here, but Rick and Jason gets first place. Colby and Stacy get second. Dean and Quack get third. So because there's no last names on this, I will not spend too much time on this because I don't know who any of these people are, but... we will move on to the Shepherd's Open Handicap, which I actually did play in. And Pete Hurd gets first place over Patrick McGuire, with Kurt Schroeder getting third place and Kyle Burse getting fourth place, who knocked me out at 5th-6th.
Kyle can do that.
He gave me a 5-game spot, getting a game on the wire, so I was up 5-0 in a race to 6 and decided I would choke like a dog. But, you know, that's just my game these days, so let's move on before I... smash my
puke
mic.
Mike? Let's go on before I puke in my mic.
Yeah.
Good deal. That's one of my tips today.
Yeah. So the next one was the JTK Memorial, which was held at the Ballroom in Portage, and that had LJ Bryseth and Sean Gello getting first place over Jeff Potts and Blake Waldo. Al Srinecki and Eric Srinecki getting third place, and Matt Russell and Jeremy Fetkenhauer getting fourth place. Lastly, there was a 649 and under BCA No Master event, so I'm not really sure how you can have a 649 No Masters, but whatever. Jacob Schneider gets first place over Mike Zahalka, with Bob Wolf getting third. Not many players. There were only 11 players there.
You see a pattern in that?
Yeah, you know, it seems like
you raised that Fargo number up, and it's fewer players.
Well,
players below 550 don't come.
Yeah, because players, and I saw a post on Facebook that I won't go into, but basically somebody on the Facebook page basically said that they were about a 575, 580-ish, and they're not willing to play a top player. And I saw that on Facebook. And he said that he talked with some of his league buddies, and they all felt that way. So I'm not really sure where this transition came in, where players are officially not even willing to play somebody that they're not supposed to beat. It's kind of concerning to me, but I won't go into that more than I already have. It's just a weird thought. And like you said, there's a trend down here where you open it up to a 649 and under, and they're down to 11 players, so it kind of seems like anybody 500 to 600 just aren't willing to play an event that they're not, you know, at the top of the leaderboards for it in Fargo, which is not really sure why that is. I guess I would have to actually ask people.
Yeah, summertime could have something to do with it, too.
That's possible.
Not the best time to have pool tournaments, but how many were at Shepherd's when you were there?
There were about 26, I think. I think there were 26 players.
You're not going to get many more than that, I don't think, for an open tournament, even if it's a graduated entry.
You stop it, Rob. There's a tournament next weekend with 108 players signed up. That's an open.
That is, and that's unusual for this time of year. So it has to be because of why the tournament is being held, some kind of mission statement of the tournament rather than just a pool tournament.
You could be right there. As a marketing thing, I could definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
So those are all the events. So let's move on to the upcoming events, which we already kind of hinted there's a big one coming up. Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by Jeff Glaza and CBD for Life Global. Several years ago, Jeff challenged himself to be the best pool player he could be. He quickly learned three things. It was going to take a lot more work than he thought, the game was mostly mental, and that he did not play well enough in pain and or being in an unhealthy state of mind. For over 20 years, Jeff has been interested in a more natural approach to health. One day, a couple years ago, while doing research, he discovered CBD as a natural way to reduce the effects of anxiety. After taking CBD regularly, he began to experience life-changing results not only with less anxiety, but also less muscle and joint pain, and the bonus of a more restful sleep. CBD is now a major part of his life and goals of being as healthy as possible and continuing to enjoy and excel at the game. Jeff would like to invite you to share in the amazing benefits of CBD and find out how it could benefit your life and game as well. He invites you to text him anytime at 715-887-2550 or follow the link on my website, and you will find over 70 high-quality products delivered to your door that all come with an empty bottle, 60-day money-back guarantee. So this weekend, Dr. Poole has a big event as part of the Season of the Native American Tour, Season 17 of the Native American Casino Pool Tour.
17 years?
17 years, it says.
Golly geez, been doing that for 17 years.
Pretty crazy.
And good for him.
Yeah, and this
is... Well, he's nominated to be on the Wisconsin Billiard Hall of Fame.
And he'll be there soon. He deserves to
be there.
He should be there.
Absolutely.
He's done a lot of work in pool in Wisconsin and abroad.
Oh, my Lord. Definitely.
So this one has up to $3,500 added, and it has a $2,700 added 8-ball with an upper division and a lower division. And if you're around Wisconsin, you probably have a pretty good idea on what the Dr. Poole series are and what they're about. So I won't go into the exact details, but it starts Friday and goes into Sunday. So those are always really, really fun events. I highly advise them if you've never had the opportunity to go to them.
You know, they are fun. And the thing I like about him now, he's been doing these for so long, right? 17 years. he's kept the history on all the players who have ever played in 17 years, and he's had between, you know, 6 and 16 tournaments a year. So that's a lot of database to have. So when you come into that tournament, you've got a number. I'll tell you what, it's very accurate.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
mine is way high, of course. Way, way, way high.
Yeah. So moving on to the next event, there is a 564 and below 8-ball. And so this is actually, I do want to cover this one, spend a little time on this one, because this is a 564, and that seems like a kind of a weird number. And I don't know if they're trying to get somebody involved with the tournament, and they're trying to keep it below their number, basically that person and below. But if that's, well, if that's the case, that's not a good thing. But I don't know that that's the case. If that's not the case and they're just picking a random number, this is the exact way that you should be running Fargo events if you're a promoter in a different state. If you do all of your events 500 below, 575 and below, 600 and below, basically nice round numbers, that allows for people to be able to literally farm their numbers to make sure that they're at those events using weekly tournaments or leagues or however they want, to basically be able to keep their numbers right where they need to be to play in those events at all times. But if you have a 600 and under, and then the next week you have a 607 and under, and then you have a 589 and under, and then 602, et cetera, et cetera, you're not keeping it around the same number, you stop some of that farming from happening to where, you know, as long as you keep your number below 600, for example, you can play in all these events. That is hugely important for the promoters to get and to kind of stop doing the same number over and over and over again. You're still going to get the same turnout, but you're going to get the people who are trying to manipulate the system basically out of being able to do that. So
the only time I would be hesitant is if the tournament was something like a 583 and under, and the promoter was playing in the tournament, he was a 582. Yeah. Then I would scratch my head a little at that.
And that's why I said opening up with this. Right. I don't know if they're trying to make this number available for somebody to get into.
Sure.
And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that that's not the case, because they do run pretty good events at this place. I have a couple problems with some of their events. They don't listen to the podcast, but I do have a problem with some of the things that they do there. But that's nitpicky things. As far as the events that they hold, they're always on time, and they're great events. So,
well, you can still be a decent person and not listen to the podcast.
No, you can't. No, of course I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding. Yeah. So that's available.
That's the first time I've ever laughed at anything you said.
Oh, you stop it. I'm funny and you laugh all the time. And then the last event that we'll talk about, which is the big event and the one I am going to as well, is the first annual Billy Bass Invitational. And this is named after Bill Chadwick, who is a very minority owner of the ballroom in Portage. And I don't know if there's a story behind how this came about, the Billy Bass Invitational, but it is going to be an open event, and it's an 8-ball race to 3 on the winners and the losers. And this was supposed to be a maximum of 64 players, which they basically just got rid of. And there are currently, as I understand it, about 100 to 110 players that are signed up. I could be off plus or minus on that, as people are signing up and removing themselves from the list seemingly all the time, but it's right around 100 players that they have, and it's a $25 entry fee with a $5 green fees. So there's not a ton of money in the entry fees, but when you start having 100 players, you know that's a pretty good payout, and they should have a Calcutta. They're supposed to have a Calcutta, which will start at 10 a.m., and assuming that they get the event done, or the Calcutta done in time, it will be a 11 a.m. start. And I would assume that this is going to go into Sunday, but it should be done pretty easily on Sunday. So this would be a great event to go to if you are anywhere in the Wisconsin area and can make it to it. I know that I will be there. Other than that, let's move on to the pros. For the recap for the pros, we are actually going to be bringing on a special guest who's already been here before, but he is special regardless. So, Cody Wettig, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I am great, Nate. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we're bringing you on because basically you and I were talking the entire night last night while the Shane and Shaw match was finishing up. And you know, we were just kind of chatting about it, you know, while it was going on. And who better to bring on than you, since you watched the entire thing from start to finish with me?
Absolutely.
So what do you think were the takeaways? Why do you think that Shane was able to jump out to a huge lead, which ended up, I guess, basically needing to be there, since he lost the last day by a score of 58-44?
So what I took out of it was, I guess, you know, listening to Jeremy Jones and those guys talk about the matches as well, that he's had in the past that were similar, you know, it sounded like he struggled sort of in the first day to begin with those other matches. So what I saw him do was, I feel like he worked on that and mentally prepared to come out stronger the first day than he maybe has in the past. And maybe by doing that, he sort of, you know, I don't want to say got lazy on the third day, but, you know, between Jason Shaw taking advantage of everything on the third day and having amazing runs, amazing breaks, you know, it just sort of slipped away from him a little bit. But I think for your question, on the first day and the second day, I think he came out with a different mentality than he usually has.
I definitely probably could have saw that too. He came out almost as if the match was personal. And like, I know in the interview that they did in between day two and three, that Shane actually said that he was trying to hold Jason under 70 games, and that was his goal coming in. So it seems like there was some premeditated thoughts, maybe a little bit of personal animosity somewhere, maybe behind the scenes, that was a little extra motivation for Shane to come in and really have that level of focus that he hasn't had in the previous one. What do you think about that, Rob?
Well, I think it's because of past history between these particular two players. And he wanted to win this, and that's why you could see him toward the end of the match really suffering after he made that mistake locking on that 10, that he was really pained by that, because he just wanted to win real bad. And where I think a lot of times you go into a match in a tournament, and of course you're there to win, but it isn't the number one thing you're trying to do, you know. And he knows to win, he's got to make every ball, he's got to play good every rack. And so that's what he came into the match with that in mind. Like, number one ball, as good as you can play, and then continually. So he had that fire, I believe, an internal combustion to get his best game on the table, put his best game on the table.
I think I agree. And to what you kind of said when he locked onto the 10 ball, for anybody who wasn't able to watch it, just to give a little bit of a backstory for that, Shane was actually up 89 to, I believe, 77. And Shane did not actually win another game until the score was 89-85. And that was after Shaw ran a 7-pack. And then he actually broke and scratched. And Shane had basically a wide open rack. I think Shaw made three or four balls on that break and gave up ball in hand for Shane to start out the rack. And he runs the rack out and then locks himself on the 10 ball on just a really unfortunate, unforced error that he ended up trying to make it and hung it in the jaws for Jason. So at that point in time, I honestly thought that Jason was going to win that match, being down 89-85 at that point, and he was breaking the balls so much better than Shane was up till that point in that day. Cody, what did you think at that point? Did you think Shane was going to kind of lose the match at that point, or do you think that was just another step in the match?
I was taking it as a step in the match. I think what I saw from Jason was, once he got, so, you know, in that interview when Shane said that he was going to keep him under 70 or whatever, not let him get above 70, I feel like Jason just in his head probably said, "What'd you just say? Like, that you said that? All right, like, I'm going to bring it now," you know? And because I saw after he got above 70, it's like Jason was like a robot. It was crazy what he was doing and the outs he was getting. after, and not just right when he got to 70, but, you know, after 70 when he got there and he went on that big, what did you say, it was a 7-pack? Is that right?
Well, that was when Shane was up at 89, but what you're referencing is I believe Shane came out and won 4 of the first 7 games. So he was up at that point 70 to 46. And basically, Jason won, I guess, what, Shane won 19 games from that point to get to 89, and then Shaw was at 85. So Shaw actually won 40 games from there to Shane's 19, so that was a pretty huge deal.
Yeah, so I was just shocked by the composure that Shane was able to keep during this run that Jason was having and getting up to that close to him within, what was it, 3 games, I think. 3 or 4 games.
I think it was 4 games that was the closest.
Right. So, you know, at that time, you know, Shane gets back to the table and he's able to do something. So when you ask the question, like, how did I feel if Jason was going to win or Shane was going to, you know, just another step in the game, I felt like as soon as Shane could get back to the table and getting a little bit of rhythm, he was going to be able to finish it. But the question was if he was ever going to be able to get back to the table after seeing how Jason was shooting.
And you are right. It was actually 3 games. I got to 89, 86, going back to my records. So when Shane was up 24 games at one point in time, and next thing you know, it's 89, 86, Jason breaking the balls so purely. And Shane really, I mean, as far as Shane goes, he broke the balls pretty bad. He was losing the cue ball. It was the one ball was coming back and kicking it. And, you know, if the one ball didn't come back and kick it, he was kind of getting to rails, sometimes even 2 or 3 rails without getting kicked. And for probably, or at least potentially, the best 10 ball breaker in the world being Shane, the fact that his cue ball is going 2 rails and it wasn't kicked, that's about as bad as Shane can break. So Jason was sticking the cue ball every time, making 3 balls and having a shot on the one pretty consistently. I didn't think Shane was... And he never found his break, which is the craziest part. Shane never broke the balls like he could down the stretch. He basically was just, you know, hitting the rack so well that he was making 3-4 balls a pop anyways. And, you know, basically winning racks from there without actually breaking and running many racks. He kind of outmoved right. Jason in a lot of those wins.
I was surprised to see Shane's break when I think he had maybe 4 times where from the break he drew the cue ball back into the, it would be his left corner back at him. And it was like, it didn't get kicked in. It just went clean in that pocket, that back corner pocket on his left side. So I was surprised to see that as well. Especially like you said, him being one of the best 10 ball breakers or the best 10 ball breaker.
Definitely.
When you're breaking him as hard as he does, that difference of, maybe a quarter tip of English. That's all. And at that speed, with the cue stick traveling at that speed, to hit the cue ball that precise every single time, I think it'd be inhuman to expect that.
Yeah.
Although you do watch, you did see in the breaking in the 9 ball, pretty, these great players are consistent at breaking, of controlling that cue ball. Most of them are.
And yeah, Rob, that actually is a pretty good point. It doesn't take much off of the cue to really lose control of the cue ball. And if you ever need any evidence, just watch us break, us amateurs.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all over the place.
The difference between stop having the cue ball bounce back and stop with no spin on it and dry into the corner is about a quarter of a tip. Not much more than that, especially at that velocity.
Oh, I guess we actually never even said what the final score was. The final score was 191, Shane. I guess that's my job, so... Sorry that you had to wait this long to hear it if you haven't watched the match. But there's been some rumors floating around on Facebook already about some rematches and, you know, potentially when those dates could be. What do you guys think taking away from this with Shane winning basically so convincingly in the first 2 days and then Shaw really battling back in the 3rd day? If a rematch were to happen, let's say tomorrow, what do you think would happen in the match?
Well, I'm inclined to say Shane would win now after this, because he, in all actuality, he probably should have won by 20 games. So although those Fargo numbers we talked about aren't going to change that much because Jason did get the 91, that was really due mostly to him making a mistake on one position shot.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, if you're racing to 100 and it's a difference of 20 games because you miss shape on one shot, That's some pretty tough competition.
Yeah, definitely. It just shows that if you give Shaw an opportunity to really, really get opened up and start breaking the balls and making some runouts, yeah. That it doesn't matter what the score theoretically is at that point. Shaw is good enough to do anything.
I would love to see the pros, the top pros, I'd say take the top 20, and have them do this, all of them, a year long, like a FedEx Cup race. Only not a tourney that goes week after week after week and individual matches that go to a high number. Not to 15, but to 50, be somewhere between 50 and 100, where the matches take 2 or 3 days to complete. And see what happens when all that pans out at the end and you've played all those long races. And see how those numbers match up and see who wins that kind of a deal. Because now you got stamina in there too, you got to have. You got to have longevity in your game.
Yeah, I definitely that would be really interesting.
That'd be really cool.
Cody, what do you think would happen if they played the rematch today?
I've been thinking about it since Robbie answered. I would still take Shane, I guess, again. My biggest concern is if Jason came out on day one, the way he was shooting or the opportunities he was getting, the opportunity he got to take over the match at that time, or at least get on a roll. If that happened in day one, that's where I would have a concern if Shane was going to finish it like he did, or if the final score was going to end up being like it did. But at this point, I would still take Shane. This is what the second match they've done, Race 200, and I think it was around the same outcome. Was it 92 maybe that Shaw got last time? So, you know, Shane sort of got him, he's got his number a little bit. You know, he's beaten twice in the Race 200. And, you know, I don't know the other history of their matches, but yeah, I would take Shane.
I think, honestly, if they played it again today, or let's just say in the next week, I think I would actually take Jason Shaw if they played it again. And going back to what we talked about before, I think there was a lot of internal motivation that Shane had coming into this match. That I think that, figuratively speaking, I think that scratch has kind of been itched by Shane, and he kind of got away with some of that motivation that he had to come into this match firing on all cylinders. And I think that if they were to do the match again, I think a lot of that internal motivation would transfer over to Jason, and Jason would really have the extra motivation coming into it. Obviously, this is all speculation, but I think Jason Shaw would actually win this match if they played it again today.
And, Nate, I definitely thought about that as well, you know, because I know Jason's going to work on any mistakes he made. He's going to come back even more hungry for this match if there was a rematch in, say, a week or so. But with all that said, what do you think a final score would be with Jason winning? What would be that final score, do you think?
Well, if going off of, I guess, kind of my prediction, if I had to stick with it, I would have to kind of go with Jason winning kind of big. Maybe 100 to 85, 180, 100 to 87. That would, based off of the argument that I gave out with the evidence, I would have to expect Jason Shaw to kind of, you know, run away with it a little bit.
Right, and I do see that. If Jason was to win the next time they played, and that next time was rather soon, I feel like it would either have to be Jason win by that 10 or more games, or Jason would lose and Shane would win again, and, you know, I wouldn't know the score. It would be a complete guess, but...
Yeah, I know that if they end up doing this again and Shane wins it for the third time, I don't think that this matchup will ever happen again, unfortunately.
But I'd like to see him up the ante and play again.
Yeah, double the bet for a race to 100.
Yeah, up it, double it. If you don't have incentive just because you want to beat the guy you're playing, up the ante. That'll give you some motivation. Another $30,000.
Yeah, I think. I think that would also be, I mean, obviously, as the fans, we want to see that, so that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So I guess that can kind of wrap up our discussion around this. We will cover one more thing that happened this week that it was pretty quick, and I didn't cover it last week because I just forgot about it. But Scott Frost and Danny Smith actually played a one-pocket event that was a 8-ahead match, and we won't spend a lot of time on it just because it wasn't much of a match. Scott actually won that match in about 4 hours, so it's pretty tough to win an 8 ahead in one pocket in 4 hours. So that'll tell you how kind of dominating that match was. So there's not a ton to talk about. Plus, I didn't really watch much of it since I was watching Shane and Shaw. Cody, did you watch any of that by chance?
I did not, no.
And I'm assuming you didn't either, Rob?
No.
Yeah, so there's not a ton to talk about. And there's not a lot that we can talk about since obviously we didn't watch much of it or any of it. So we will just give that that happened, and Scott Frost wins.
That has to be probably an experience factor working in there. I mean, Scott's been one of the best in the country for a lot of years.
In one pocket, yes, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And I should say that there was a $20,000 aside for the guys, so $20,000 entry fee, so $40,000 in the middle. And this is actually the third time that they've played, so I can add that in there. Scott has now won both times at his house at Freezers, and Danny won his match when they were in New Orleans. So I think they're planning a fourth one at Danny's place to
probably,
I guess, do another another installment of this matchup. So we can look forward to that at some point in time. But as far as that goes, we will. That's all that we'll talk about for this.
Yeah, it's funny how much a table makes a difference. You'd think when players are as good as these guys are that it wouldn't matter what kind of table they play on. But it's a factor. It's like professional golfers with courses they like. They always play certain courses better. And I think pool's kind of the same way. You ever get on a pool table, Nate, that you like, and you play really good on it?
Not in my 20-plus years of playing pool. I've never found a table I like.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Now, home field advantage.
If I was you, I would have quit a long time ago.
Yeah, right. Home field advantage does have a pretty strong effect. Just being comfortable with where your surroundings, it helps.
It sure does.
Yeah, and with that, Cody, we can bid you adieu. Thank you for joining us for this, and until we have you on again.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Cody, it was great to listen to your input about the match and your insights there. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Talk to you later.
So there is one big upcoming event for the pros, and that is the Turning Stone Classic. And that is always held somewhere in New York. I'm pretty sure it's in New York. Upstate New York, like around Syracuse, maybe.
Upstate Al.
Sorry?
Upstate Al. Right? He does the commentary.
I'm not sure, actually, to be honest. You could be right. I don't know. I know that is an event that's twice a year, and it is always has a great turnout. And I think Jason Shaw's actually won this 6 times now. He won it earlier in the season, and he's had a really good record at this event. So
I think this has a free stream also, the Turning Stone. If I remember right, I've watched it in years past.
Yeah, that can always change. I don't know if it is or not, to be honest.
That can change.
Yeah, but it should be able to be found on Facebook pretty easily if it is a free stream. I'm probably should know the answer to that question, but I don't at the moment, so I don't know who's putting the event on. But that is the big event coming up, and other than that, we can move on to the discussion. So I think, Rob, this is going to be a pretty long episode with how long we discussed the Shane and Shaw match. I think maybe we should skip a discussion topic this week. What do you think?
I think so. I think let's have one next week.
I think that'd be a good idea. And I think we're going to have a good one next week based off of the one that we were going to do this week. But we'll push that back 1 week, and you can take it away with your tidbits if you would like, sir. This is becoming quickly one of my favorite segments.
Okay, Nate. Just because it's you and only you, I'll do a couple of these were on I'm reading these from the Tonight Show in the past. Some things that the host of the Tonight Show had said, and this particular one though, I believe is true. The Supreme Court ruled that You cannot have a nativity scene in Washington, D.C. And it wasn't for any religious reasons that they ruled that way. They ruled that way because they couldn't find three wise men and a virgin in Washington, D.C.
Ah,
I know.
I see. I see what you did there.
Here's an amazing story. There's a man in Orlando, Florida, who was actually hit by 8 cars consecutively, and only one of them stopped. The first 7 drivers thought he was a lawyer, and the 8th was a lawyer. Yeah. New Year's Eve, where old acquaintance be forgot. Unless, of course, those tests come back positive.
Fair.
This one here I thought was very timely. And the world today is, politics is in the headlines a lot. So I looked the word up, politics, in the dictionary. And it's actually a combination of 2 words, of course. Poly, which means many, and tics, which means bloodsuckers.
That is pretty appropriate for today's day and age, isn't it?
Yeah, really, it is. Yeah. So there's just a couple that was from the Tonight Show, different hosts to it. We need, we're going to say our segment is R. Lamar's 2 Tips, presented by Robin Nate.
There it is. And for anybody who doesn't know, it's Randy Lamar, who is a kind of a Wisconsin legend, I guess. And his nickname is 2 Tips, because he likes to use 2 tips of English on every single shot he's ever shot in his entire life. You need a stop shot, he will hit a 2 tips of low that stops right once it gets to the, it stops rolling out right when it gets to the ball. That's his game right there, 2 tips all the time. So, Rob, do you want to be the very, very first tip ever, or do you want me to?
Let me go, Nate.
Go ahead.
And we'll see how it works. This time, we'll alternate. Just remember who went first the last time. I'll go first this time. Number one, I tried to think about there is a lot of players out there that don't want their number to stay the same. They're a 572. They want to get better. They're a 530. They really want to get better. And I'd say by far the majority of pool players out there would like to get better if they could. And I would say the majority of pool players are probably stuck somewhere in between there, where they're not really, maybe they don't have the time, maybe they don't have a place to play, maybe they don't have a lot of reasons going on in their life for not being a better pool player. But there are some things that will help you get better immediately. Most of those things, besides training to learn how to pocket balls, is in your head. And I know that there's, I see it all the time in the middle of games, people are playing and things happen. It's not what they want to happen. They shoot a shot, and if they don't make it, well, they didn't want that to happen unless they're playing safe, or the cue ball goes someplace and hits a ball that they didn't want to hit. And that happens, and they, you know. And all of a sudden, you can see that there's turmoil internally going on with after that, because they'll make expressions like, how the hell did that happen? Or what the heck is going, why me? What these kind of, their self impressions of a fact that just happened on a pool table. And in order to raise your game, I believe the number one mental factor that you have to have is that a failure is not a bad thing. Now, you maybe want to win the game, and you didn't win the game because you failed. But if you take something away from that that's positive and look at any situation on the table at any given time as a challenge, that ball's going to end up where it ends up. Maybe not exactly where you wanted, but all that means is your next turn is another challenge. And maybe it's going to be a little tougher challenge than what you wanted. But that doesn't make any difference. It is what it is. The ball is where it is, and you have to shoot. So by reacting to where the ball goes, physically, emotionally, mentally reacting to that when it's not where you want it doesn't help you play better at all. Unless you're, of course, John Kramer, who is a very unique human being. And, you know, he gets angry and it actually helps him. But that's not the run of the mill. So that's my tip. That's my tip. Just look at the next shot. Don't look at your last shot. Don't look at what just happened. Don't look at what's making you upset or what doesn't feel good. Look at the shot that's coming up is what's important. And that's your challenge.
Staying
the rest
in the
of
moment.
It, yep. Play in the moment for sure. Or forward, slightly forward.
My tip will be, it is a mechanics thing, and I see a lot of amateurs doing this, where they kind of stand up and shoot at the same time. It's a motion that they have basically built into their stroke where they shoot the shot, and during the motion of doing that and following through, they are standing up all in that motion. The biggest thing that I say when working with amateurs, basically, including myself, I'm not trying to exclude myself from that, but is regardless of the difficulty of shot, whether it is a stop shot that it needs to travel 2 inches into a pocket or whether it is the hardest shot you've ever shot in your entire life, watch the ball fall in the hole. At that moment that you see the ball fall in the hole, stand up then. If the ball does not fall into the pocket yet, do not stand up. Watch it fall into the hole. Down in your mechanics with the follow through. Way too many people stand up out of their shot and it affects their mechanics a lot. If you watch the top pros, they do not jump. They are down on the table when the ball falls in the hole. If you are jumping out of your shoes, basically, when shooting a hard shot or any shot, really, it's going to affect your mechanics and it's going to affect your shot. So the best thing that you can do if you're trying to improve quickly is watch the ball fall in the hole. So that is my advice for this week. Watch the ball fall in the hole.
Do not move. Stay right where you are and look at the ball go in the hole before you even move.
Exactly. Yep.
In fact, that your tip right there, Nate, reminds me of the last three cushion billiard tournament I was at with a friend who was playing in the tournament and he was struggling one set. And I'm playing the best, was missing some very makeable shots, a little under his average of where he should be playing. And when the match was over, he didn't win it. A little while later, another player came up, and we were standing there talking, and he came up, and he says, you know what happened that match? He said, no, I don't know what happened. He said, you were standing up on the shot. You were jumping up on the shot, almost every one. And then I looked back as I watched part of that match, and I said, yeah, he was. So he was a little bit apprehensive about the match because it was a match against one of the better players in the tournament. And that's when this happens more than not. If you're relaxed, a lot of times you will naturally stay down on the ball. But when you're not relaxed, when that adrenaline's pumping, when the situation is there staring you in the face, you kind of want to leave. You know, the job is to pocket the ball, but you kind of want to get out of there. Because this situation isn't real comfortable.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so you jump up. But it's a very momentary thing. It's a split second in time when it happens. But that's a great tip. That's just, you know, and you, once you start doing it, I don't care what number you at, what number, if you just start doing what Nate just said to do, your number will go up 40.
Assuming you don't 40. Do it already, but yes.
Yeah, if 40.
Yeah.
Easy from wherever you are, you're making a big jump. Now you're not missing as many shots.
You actually will.
You'll just make more balls.
And if you don't believe me, let's say you are a sub. Let's say the best way to find out if this is something that you need to do. Let's say you're sub 600. And, you know, there's even people that the person that this. Segment is named after Randy Lamar. He jumps out of his shoes more than just about anybody that I know. He's one of the only people I know who can literally jump, do a backflip, and still drill the shot. I mean, he jumps that high after every single shot that he shoots at. And there's some people that can make it work, but I'll guarantee you that the people that are doing it, if they were to just stay down on their shots, they would still be better than if they're jumping out of it. But that's if this is something that you think that you don't have as a problem and you stay down on your shots, you should try to find a stream of yourself, if you've ever been on a stream in your entire life, and watch that stream. Go back and watch it and see if you are still down on your shots when the ball falls in the hole. If you do not have a stream that you've ever done or been a part of, you've never recorded yourself playing, record yourself playing and record yourself with a buddy and play a $20 set. You gotta do something to get your mind off of, basically. I'm not trying to advocate gambling here, but you need to set yourself up in a situation that's a little uncomfortable to see what you're going to be like when you're actually in a match. If you just record yourself practicing, everybody's relaxed and everybody's cool and calm and collected when you're when you're practicing by yourself. When the pressure's put on, that's when people start jumping out of their shoes more than when they're calm and collected in a practice session. So
you want to watch somebody who accentuates that, who's a pro. And they all do it. All the pros do it, but they do it subtly, and you can't really. Well, yeah, he really stayed down. They just kind of naturally do. Danny Olsen, super exaggerates the staying down. Just watch him play shoot a few balls in it.
Chris Robinson is another one of those.
Oh yeah,
they really stay down on their shots. But yeah, so those I guess are our two tips for the week, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Two tips.
And they're always going to be the last segment that we do because we want them to stay fresh in your mind. So those are going to be the takeaways, hopefully, that you take from the podcast. So,
I would say these two tips. You apply these two tips, your pool game is going to improve.
They will.
So
yes.
if you're a guy who wants to stay under a number, just don't listen to these.
Yeah, skip over the last 5 minutes. But I guess that brings another episode to a close this week, huh?
Well, I think it does.
It was another fun one.
Yeah, it was great. Listen, we're starting to get what I think is more fun listening, more talking pool. Regurgitating who won and who lost tournaments is fine, but I think this type of thing that we're doing is better. It's certainly there's going to be some interest out there. If the majority of our listeners are 500 to 600, they're going to like these tips that we start giving them.
Yeah, and if if you like a lot of these tips, that's great, and we are trying to help out in any way that we can. But another way to do them is to actually go to your house pro if you have one and just get some professional lessons done.
Sure.
Rob and I will help in any sort of way that we can along the way to give you like little tidbits here and there that'll help your game. But everything that we're going to teach you, a professional is going to know tenfold and be able to really show you what you're doing wrong. So if you find that what we're doing helps, a house pro will help also, and more than we ever could. So Rob, with that, we can close it out for another week. Thanks again for joining me.
It's my pleasure, buddy. Keep up the good work.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is KNIGHT.